ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
अंदरगिरिं ओजसोत् पत्या दुर्मदा ननन्द उदधीम्निन्यु शक्ता परिगा भावः. Thereafter, with great strength, the demons and the demigods, who were all very powerful, and who had long, stout arms, uprooted Mandara Mountain, crying very loudly, they brought it toward the ocean of milk. Dura bharva bharod vahasrantha shakra vairochanadaya apharyanthastham bodham vivasha vichatupati. Because of conveying the great mountain for a long distance, King Indra, Maharaj Bali, and the other demigods and demons became fatigued. Being unable to carry the mountain, they left it on the way. Nipatan sa giristatra bahun amaradanavan shuranayam asamahata bharina kanakanchala. The mountain known as Mandara was extremely heavy, being made of gold, fell and smashed many demigods and demons. Purport: by constitution, gold is heavier than stone. Since Mandara Mountain was made of gold and was therefore heavier than stone, the demigods and demons could not properly carry it to the ocean of milk.
Tamstha bhagna manaso bhagna bahuru kandharan vigyaya bhagavan stattra bahuva garudadvajaha.
The demigods and demons were frustrated and disheartened, and their arms, thighs, and shoulders were broken. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who knows everything, appeared there on the back of his carrier, Garuda.
Giripata vinishpishtan vilokya maradhanavam ikshaya jivayam asa nirjaram nirvaranam yata.
Observing that most of the demons and demigods had been crushed by the falling of the mountain, the Lord glanced over them and brought them back to life. Thus they became free from the grief, and they even had no bruises on their bodies.
In the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, he tells us that he is the strength of the strong. He is the intelligence of the intelligence. He is the ability in man. Indeed, it is said, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate, that he is the source of everything. He is sarvakarana karanam. He is the cause of all causes. Here in this beautiful story from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find the most powerful personalities in this entire universe. Those persons who are controlling all the affairs of the universe. We are finding the greatest of the demigods and the greatest of the demons. Some of us have some pride of our ability to control. Some of us are even so foolishly proud of our opulences. A rich man in this world may have a few billion dollars even. But do you know what that wealth is compared to the wealth of the demigods? What each demigod has proprietorship over is millions of times more valuable than everything on this earth. The heavenly planets are larger in size than this earth planet, and they are filled with the greatest opulence. Practically everything is made of gold and jewels, most precious jewels that are not even to be found on this earth planet. Just like in India, the most popular of all fruits is the mango. People are very much satisfied by eating the mangoes. Srila Prabhupada once told us that the mango is one fruit which is a heavenly fruit which grows on the earth. But the difference is the mangoes and the heavenly planets, it's described in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, that when they fall from a tree and break, they create an entire river of mango juice. And it's very sweet. So we cannot compare the beauty and the opulence of this world compared to the heavenly planets. As far as strength, as far as knowledge, as far as wealth, as far as physical beauty, we have not even a trace of the opulence of the demigods. And as far as the power to control, if we can control our family, if we can control a few brahmacharis, if we can control... A wife is always controlling her husband. Her husband is thinking he's controlling the wife. He becomes very proud. What to speak of some political leaders. Like now, the president or the dictator, whatever he is, of Iraq, he is very proud that he just marched into this tiny little country of Kuwait and seized it. I am in control. And now he wants to walk into another country and seize it and be in control. We have seen so many of these foolish, petty conquerors of this world. We have seen Napoleon, we have seen Hitler, we have seen Alexander the Great. Where are they today? They conquer a few places and then ultimately they're smashed and they're crushed and they die and they lose everything. So we are proud of some ability to control. But compared to the demigods, they are controlling all the planets and the universes. Indra is in control of the rain of every planet. Vayu is in control of the air and the wind of all planets. Agni is in control of the fire of all planets. And as far as the demons are very, very proud. But compared to these demons we are reading about in the Srimad Bhagavatam, these demons today are like infant children. When you read about great demons like Hiranyakashipu, my God, he was so powerful. These demons today that wreak so much fear amongst men, what are they? They cannot even conquer this one little planet. We have not seen a single demon within our modern history that can conquer this one little tiny planet Earth. And they've all tried to do so much. Hitler, his goal was to conquer the Earth. He conquered a few countries. Then he was killed. Napoleon wanted to conquer the Earth. Killed. Now some of these leaders in the Middle Eastern countries, they want to conquer the earth. They'll be squashed like flies. So Hiranyakashipu actually conquered the universe. And his great-grandson is Bali Maharaj, who is more powerful than him. He conquered the universe too. Bali Maharaj, with the help of his demon associates, literally were able to defeat Indra with his mighty thunderbolt and cause him to run in fear of his life. And all the other demigods, they're hiding from the power and the strength of Bali Maharaj and his great demon forces. But here we find that the demons and the demigods, the most powerful controllers that we will ever read of, ultimately they have to turn to Krishna for everything. This great Mandara mountain is like a lesson for all of them. They were told that you move this Mandara mountain through the ocean of milk, you churn it, and you will get nectar. So yes, we will move the mountain. But the mountain is made of gold. Everyone is anxious of gold. Of course, for a devotee who is on the transcendental platform, he sees that there is no difference between gold and the stones in the street. Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita. That one who sees gold and pebbles in the street with equal vision, he is a man of real intelligence. He is a man of real detachment. But the materialists, they are constantly making this distinction. Gold is the symbol of wealth. I know in America and perhaps in other countries as well, the whole currency exchange is based on gold. Gold is the supreme symbol of wealth in this world. In the United States of America, there is a place called Fort Knox. And in Fort Knox, they gathered as much gold as possible throughout the land and made it into special bars, gold bars, and they all had a government seal put on them. And there was just tons and tons of gold put into Fort Knox with the highest security possible. And the whole wealth of the country was based on this gold. And when they wanted to make currency, they would give you a piece of paper which said that this means you have the right to so much gold in Fort Knox. And because you have the right to that much gold, therefore this paper is very much worth something. Gradually, they just started making more and more and more and more and more and more money. And then they started making for silver certificate. It says on every dollar bill in the past, silver certificate. Now it doesn't say anything because they just print. It's not worth the paper it's on. Therefore, the economy has to take a dive into disaster because there's nothing to base the wealth on. So gold is the symbol of wealth. We notice Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha. Their great success is they had... Hiranyakashipu was very famous because he had great gold. And Hiranyaksha also. He was able to extract so much gold from the earth. And the Srimad Bhagavatam describes that Kali Yuga, when the personification was defeated by Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Parikshit said that you can dwell only in four places, where there is illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. And Kali responded that these things cannot exist within your kingdom because you are so powerful as a ruler. You enforce the Dharma. Where will I be? You have to give me some place. I am surrendered to you. So Maharaj Parikshit said, wherever there is the hoarding of gold, Kali Yuga will be there. And the great Acharyas tell us that wherever there is the hoarding of gold, greed for gold, inevitably there will be intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, and meat eating. all things follow greed. It is also said in the Srimad Bhagavatam that gold is so dangerous because it's so glittering that the glitter of gold attracts the minds of the materialists like nothing else. Therefore, a devotee sees gold as nothing but yellow stool. When you have jaundice, your stool is yellow. It is the stool of a disease. So a great soul sees gold with that vision. He is not attracted. Even the great devotees of the Lord, when they want to attract the materialists, even to devotional service, sometimes they use this tendency. But that is good. That is their mercy. At New Vrindavan, Srila Bhaktipada's very genius idea was, let the whole world come to have darshan with Srila Prabhupada, my Guru Maharaj. Let everyone come and fall at his feet and hear his teachings and see the glory of his life. So how to bring them? How to bring a materialistic society that's completely mesmerized by wealth? Everyone is attracted by the glitter of gold. So he took gold leaf, which costs, it's very inexpensive because it's so thin. If you take a piece of paper, 1/100th the thickness of a piece of paper is about what a piece of gold leaf is. If you breathe on it, it will just fly to the other side of the room. But it's very, even though it's so thin, the nature of gold is it's such an incredible element that such a thin piece of gold, if it's put on a building, it will last 50, 60, 100 years, even through rain and snow. So he covered the domes of Srila Prabhupada's samadhi with gold and called it Prabhupada's palace of gold. You think people come to see Prabhupada? People come to see gold. The devotees come to see Prabhupada, but the average man, they come to see the gold. A dome covered with gold. Such a sense enjoyment to see the glitter of gold sparkling in the sunlight. But when they come, they see that, just like Srila Bhaktipada used to say, that Srila Prabhupada's palace is meant just like a piece of jewelry. You have a gold setting so that you can put within that setting the most valuable jewel. Huh? So we created this beautiful golden palace just to set in the center the most valuable jewel, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So when people come to see the gold, they also have to see that the gold is a setting. And I'm sitting on the altar in a most merciful and benevolent, transcendental manner is Srila Prabhupada, the crest jewel of all humanity, who has descended from Goloka Vrindavan to give us all love of God. So in this way, such is the power of the attraction of gold. People kill, they steal. They'll do anything for gold, for wealth. And even pious people, they may be in the mode of goodness, but still, they are very much attached to wealth, to the glitter of gold. So here we see what gold does to people who are attached. Here is a mountain of gold. What more can you want than a mountain of gold? And this mountain is miles and miles and miles high. And the demigods and the demons, who are all either in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance, but they are all very, very much addicted and attached to the glitter of gold. And here, right in their own hands, is more gold than they can possibly ever desire. And they're being crushed by that very mountain of gold. The very object of their greatest affection is crushing them, tearing their limbs apart, killing them, bruising them. They're screaming and crying in agony, but they can't let go. This is the nature of this material world. Gold is the symbol of attachment. Any attachments we have in this world, it's so crazy, because the very thing that we're dreaming, imagining, meditating upon to give us pleasure will ultimately crush us and ultimately cause us spiritual death. Therefore it is said, Yehi samsparashaja bhoga dhuka jonaya evate atyanta vanta konte anateshu ramate. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are born of the contact of the senses and their objects. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. Just like a moth is so much attracted to the sight of a flame, he'll do anything to get to the flame. If he's on the other side of a window, he will just be smashing himself, going backward, flying as hard as he can into that window to try to break through, because somehow or other he has this imagination within his mind that if I can gain that fire, I will be happy, I will find pleasure. This mental imagination is an illusion. He's simply meditating, the fire, the fire, the fire, the fire. And he goes through great, great lengths and even risks his life. And finally, when he attains the fire, what happens? He's burned to ashes. And it's not an easy death. Do you know what it feels like to be roasted by fire? Sometimes devotees, when they have difficulty, they say, I'm fried. But do you know what it really means to be fried? The moth is actually fried. You're not fried. You're just in a little mental anxiety. If you really want to know what pain is, get fried like the moth. And factually, anything you're attached to ultimately will fry you like the moth. So similarly, the object of everybody's affection in this world is gold, wealth. Gold, as I say, is the symbol of all attachment in this material world. And we here have the most incredible enjoyers of material nature. And here they have the very symbol of the ultimate enjoyment right in their hands. And it's crushing them. It's causing them unbearable pain. It's causing them death. So therefore, we should learn from their example that the pleasures in this world are all sources of pain. Sense enjoyment is the cause of spiritual death. And spiritual death means no real pleasure. Because it is only in spiritual awakening that there is true ananda or bliss. And to the degree that we are attached to the objects of the senses, we cannot experience the joy of the soul. The mind, as explained in Gita, is the best friend of the conditioned soul if it is attached to Krishna. Bandhuratmatmanastasya yenatmaivatmanachada anatmanastasatrute varatitamaivasatrava. But the same mind that is attached to sense enjoyment is the worst enemy. The mind is in such illusion. The mind is constantly hankering and lamenting, accepting and rejecting, all on the basis of trying to find happiness where there is no happiness. We spend years and years and years and years hoping, praying, imagining, if only I have this, if only I can attain this pleasure, how much joy it will bring me. And then when we, alas, when we find it, we're crushed by that very attachment. The nature of Maya is to promise us everything. And in her promises, she simply cheats us of the valuable time where we could be meditating on Krishna. We're meditating on some hope for pleasure from some material sense enjoyment. And that very time that we're meditating on material sense gratification, our valuable human life is ticking away. Tick-tuck, tick-tuck, tick-tuck. 1 second less, 1 second less, 1 second less, and our whole life is wasted in this way. In this way, Maya is cheating us through the enemy of our mind. Therefore, a devotee, when he reads this story, he understands, yes, this is the fact. Why should I contemplate the objects of the senses? Ultimately, that jayato vishayan pungsang, Krishna says, when contemplating the objects of the senses, you develop attachment for them. From such attachment comes lust. When lust is unfulfilled, there is anger. Krodad bhavati samohat. From anger, we become illusioned. From this illusion, we lose all of our memory. Our intelligence is lost. And then we engage in crazy, abominable activities which simply cause us great suffering. So therefore, a devotee, after reading this beautiful narration, understands, why should I be contemplating this mountain of gold in the form of whatever material attachments or attractions that I am seeking in my life, when I know in the end it's simply going to crush me and cause me pain? Huh? This is the spirit of a real renunciate. He sees through the fallacies of material nature. Dukkalayam ashashvatam. This place is a place of misery. And there's nothing more to be said than that. Abramabhuvanaloka punaravartanojana mamupetya tukonte apunarajanmana vidyate. From the highest planet in this material world down to the lowest, they are all places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But Krishna says, one who attains my abode never takes birth again. So a devotee must focus his consciousness on Krishna. Not be illusioned, not be dissuaded by the propaganda of this world, which is promising us so many mountains of gold. Because we know whatever mountain of gold, in any form it comes, it is simply going to cause us suffering and ultimately crush us and cause us pain. Huh? So here the demigods and the demons, the very object of all of their attraction, the thing that they're giving their life and their soul to attain, is crushing them, breaking their limbs, smashing their fingers, tearing their arms out of their sockets. Ultimately, many of them are being brutally crushed to death by the very thing they're giving their life, they're dedicating their life, they're surrendering their life for. This is material life. In a very, very grand symbolic way, the demigods and the demons of the highest order are showing us what material life is all about. Therefore, a devotee understands that the real life is to follow in the footsteps of Queen Kunti. Vishaya, what is that verse? She explains that Lord of Madhu, Sri Krishna, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be forever drawn unto you without being diverted to anything or anyone else. To cultivate this Krishna consciousness, this one-pointed goal, mamupetya punarajanma dukalayam ashashvatam. Those great souls who make Krishna their goal of life, they are not interested in this place of misery, the material existence, and the pleasures therein. So this must be constantly our target, In the association of sadhus, we must constantly be hearing and chanting to make sure our aim is always fixed on Krishna.
Vyabhishayatmaka budhir ekeha kuru nandana bahushaka.
Krishna says in Gita that those who are on this path, their aim is one, Krishna. Those who are not in this path, their aim is many-branched. Their intelligence is going wherever their senses drag it. So yes, our senses are uncontrolled. What to do? We have conditioned ourselves since time immemorial to be godas, the service of the senses.
Tani saravani samyam ya yukta asita matpara vasehi asyandriyani tasya pragya pratishtita.
For one who restrains his senses and fixes his consciousness upon me is known as a man of steady intelligence. So we have to tolerate the senses. We have to conquer the lower self with the higher self by hearing the transcendental glories of the Lord. It's very important. We read in Chaitanya Charitamrita in the story of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya.
Hare Krishna.
When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya saw Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was only 24 years old at the time, and he was very beautiful. He was the most beautiful of all objects in the entire existence, his beautiful golden form. And he had just taken sannyas, and Sarvabhauma was thinking, unless he's very well versed in Vedanta, he cannot maintain his sannyas. Unless you're constantly hearing about the illusion of this material world, and you're constantly hearing what is the truth and what to strive for, then you cannot maintain a standard of renunciation. So therefore, Sarvabhauma was very worried about this young sannyasi. And he told Lord Chaitanya that, let me instruct you in Vedanta. Unless you know Vedanta very well, you will not be able to resist the attractions of this world. You have to, your intelligence, your spiritual intelligence, which is a gift of God, must be so strong that you are always able to discern what is truth and what is illusion. And actually, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, on one level, we must accept, yes, he is correct. So when we come together to hear the bhakti shastras, to hear about the difference between devotion to Krishna and attachment to material life, we are constantly given a good direction.
Nasta praesha bhadreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya bhagavati uttama sloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki.
It is said one must hear Bhagavatam daily. If you hear Bhagavatam daily, not just sitting because it's the formality that I'm supposed to be in class now, but if you're actually hearing with open heart, open ears, open mind, like a hungry man eating a nice feast of prasad. When you're hungry, when you're fasting all day, and at the end of the day there's a nice feast, do you eat as a ritualistic formality? You're just completely absorbed in this prasad, right? You're just being satisfied with every bite. You're just looking for satisfaction in every particle of that prasad. This is how we should hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Not just as a ritual, not just, oh, it's time for class. All right, from 5:45 to 6:30 I will sit here. Hare Krishna. Somehow or other, I'll make it through this one again. I've made it every other day, I'll make it again. If this is your consciousness, what will you hear? But if you're really like a starving man, relishing each bite of a feast of Krishna Prasad, in such a way we should be relishing each word of the narration of Srimad Bhagavatam. And if we are like this, every day, in the association of sadhus, hearing Bhagavat, it will strengthen our intelligence. It will constantly reconfirm our direction in life. And we need constant reconfirmation. In this age of Kali Yuga, as soon as you walk outside of the temple, of course here you don't even have to walk outside of the temple. The outside is coming in constantly. As soon as you just open your ears or your eyes in any direction except Radha Gopinath,
you're just going to be attacked with the propaganda. Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. Everyone around you is just trying to enjoy. Puna, punas, charavata, charavana, anam. They're all chewing the chewed and chewing the chewed and chewing and chewing and chewing and chewing. And they're making it look like they're enjoying like anything. But actually, what are they enjoying? If you don't hear every day the glories of the Bhagavatam, you'll start thinking, they're enjoying. Why am I not enjoying? Look at what they're doing. Look at all they have. They're listening to all this nice music. They get to do anything they want, whenever they want. They get to eat whenever they want, whatever they want. They get to have nice, you know, associates of girlfriends and boyfriends. And they get to drive in nice cars. They're wearing nice clothes. They're enjoying. Look, they're smiling. The brahmacharis aren't smiling so much. They're wearing rags. They're sleeping on the floor. They can't do anything except Devamrita, what he says. What is this? The propaganda of the material energy. And your own family members will say, what are you doing, you crazy fellow? Come, get married. Have nice sex life with a beautiful woman. And have nice children that look just like you. And they are just your obedient servants at all times. And to have a nice house with nice furniture and a nice car and servants and just do what you want and think what you want and be free, be liberated, enjoy. Your friends, your family members, and everyone around you, they're all giving you this propaganda. Who are we? No. Unless you are constantly fixed in the target of Krishna as the goal of life, unless you're constantly fixed with the conviction that they are all simply inevitably going to be crushed by the mountain, the golden mountain of all of their so-called attachments. They are all like so many moths, so anxiously flying toward the fire. And in due course of time, they will all be burned to ashes. If we do not have this conviction, we will inevitably fall down to material life. Therefore, it's very, very essential that we have the association of devotees and we hear the philosophy of Bhagavat daily. This will give us direction. It will give us strength. It will keep us immune from the illusions of the lying propaganda of Maya in her most powerful time of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is the time where Maya is supreme in the lives of practically all. This is her age. To resist her illusions, we must be very strong. We must be resolute in purpose, and our aim is one. Understand that these people who are enjoying a little in this world, they are nothing compared to what the demigods are enjoying. And the demons. I'm talking about the pious people. There are so many pious people that are just in the mode of goodness and enjoying. We think, oh, I don't have to be a demon. I'll just be pious and look at how I can enjoy. The demigods are the most pious. And we see how they are being crushed by the very object of their love. Huh? And the demons, these are the greatest demons. The most successful demons. They've conquered the universe. And they are all being crushed by the very object of their affection. Huh? And even the foolish ass, he's being kicked in the face by the very object of his affection. So from the highest to the lowest, everyone is being embarrassed by material nature. So let us keep our intelligence very strong. Let us keep our hearts very pure. Let us keep our direction in life fixed at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Samashita ye pada palava plavam mahatpadam punya yashomurari kripam budir vatsa padam 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 yadvi padam natesham. The great souls, they make their goal in life only Vaikuntha. They never make their goal in life anything in this material world, because they know that this is a place where there is danger at every step. Is there any questions? Very much. Hare Krishna.